Blog Talk Radio.
This is the first time in our history that this ceremony has been held, as you've been told, on this west front of the Capitol. Standing here, one faces a magnificent vista opening up on this city's special beauty and history. At the end of this open mall are those shrines to the giants on whose shoulders we stand. Directly in front of me, a monument to a monumental man, George Washington, father of our country. A man of humility who came to greatness reluctantly. He led America out of revolutionary victory into infant nationhood. Off to one side, the stately memorial to Thomas Jefferson, a Declaration of Independence flames with his eloquence. And then beyond the reflecting pool, the dignified columns of the Lincoln Memorial. Whoever would understand in his heart the meaning of America will find it in the life of Abraham Lincoln. Beyond those monuments to heroism, is the Potomac River, and on the far shore, the sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David. They add up to only a tiny for our freedom. Each one of those markers is a monument to the kind of hero I spoke of earlier. Their lives ended in places called Belleau Wood, the Argonne, Omaha Beach, Salerno, and halfway around the world on Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Porkchop Hill, the Chosin Reservoir, and in 100 rice paddies and jungles of a place called Vietnam. Under one such marker lies a young man, Martin Treptow, who left his job in a small town barber shop in 1917 to go to France with the famed Rainbow Division. There on the Western Front, he was killed trying to carry a message between battalions under heavy artillery fire. We're told that on his body was found a diary. On the flyleaf, under the heading My Pledge, he had written these words: America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure. I will fight cheerfully and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone. The crisis we're facing today does not require of us the kind of sacrifice that Martin Treptow and so many thousands of others were called upon to make. It does require, however, our best effort and our willingness to believe in ourselves and to believe in our capacity to perform great deeds, to believe that together, with God's help, we can and will resolve the problems which now confront us. And after all, why shouldn't we believe that? We are Americans. God bless you and thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome, listeners, to City on a Hill. We're so grateful you've tuned in. As always, we ask that you invite your friends and family throughout the country to come join us, come and learn with us. And we are so grateful to be joined by so many wonderful people today that wants to share knowledge. And but always, we'd like to invite the God of the universe to come and be with us so that the words that he said will be found useful by the listeners and will make a difference in today. So if you don't mind, please join me in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you that you are God, you are mighty. Lord, we thank you for men like Ronald Reagan that has reminded us, Lord, that we view all things are possible. And Lord, you have allowed us to live in this land of the free, and we want to keep it the home of the brave and the land of the free. And we ask that you give us wisdom in today's conversation and beyond. May it be found useful, Lord, to make a difference in the children of America, in America's future. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Okay.
I'm good. I am not sure who all we have on. I know we've got Professor Milgram. If you don't mind, I'm going to let the rest of you speak up so we know who the rest are.
Anne Eubank.
Linda Murphy.
Okay, and I'm Jim Milgram.
Hi, Professor Milgram. Oh, we are so grateful, sir, to be joined by you and Miss Linda Murphy and Miss Anne Eubanks. And today's going to be a spectacular day full of information, which everyone needs for such a time as this. And we're grateful, Professor Jim, that you are one of those that spoke out early on at the very beginning, warning us. And you and Professor Stotsky has been traveling all over the country trying to wake up America. And it's so wonderful, you know, to hear another old Californian, President Ronald Reagan, who have led this nation, you know, greatly. And I just consider you a leader, sir, because you don't have to do what you have been doing. So we thank you, and we're so very grateful for the difference it's making. But if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead, Professor Milgram, and let you kind of, for the listeners that I can't imagine who's not heard you that's listening to us, but if you don't mind, tell a little bit about yourself.
I don't know quite what to say. I recently retired professor of mathematics at Stanford University. So I'm a research mathematician, and that means that I work at literally at the highest levels of mathematics and produce research and papers that hopefully bring the subject further. That's my basic background. But maybe 15 years ago, after a disastrous experience in New Mexico, where I had taught a couple undergraduate classes at the University of New Mexico, and I had discovered that the kids in my classes were really very bright. I mean, they were almost or equally bright as the students I worked with at Stanford. But their educations in K-12 had been so bad that I never knew when I would reach a point where they'd never seen anything. And I didn't know there were so many of these gaps that I didn't know how to fix it either. And so I saw for the first time a total waste of some very, very capable people, and we could blame it on only one thing, the lousy educations they'd received in K-12. So that kind of changed my focus seriously, and from that point on, from about 1997, one word, I did most of my time was devoted to trying to fix this mess. I became, as we can tell, I became fairly well known, at times I felt we were gaining ground, but more recently with Common Core and all of the paraphernalia that's attached to it, I feel that we've taken a huge step backward, and I just don't know what to do about it. So what I've been doing is when people have been asking me, I've tried my best to arrange to speak to them and to travel when I'm able. So that, I guess, is enough about me.
Well, Professor Milgram, thank you. And I do remember the very beginning when you and Professor Stotsky were on the show with us, and you were very, very concerned. And everything that you were saying then, you know, we're seeing results of now. And I think I even heard that you had mentioned in an interview with our friend Alice Linehan that really after 3 years of this kind of thinking in the Common Core math, that, you know, it could be that this is not something you can easily remediate, or if at all.
I'm afraid that that's true. And the reason that we're very sure of this is that what happened with Common Core was... I should say that when I came back to California from New Mexico, and this was in 1996, California was in the midst of a total disaster in mathematics, and parents all over the state were furious, and the industry was, and the parents were both pushing on the state legislature and the governor to fix things. And the what they were dealing with was a new set of standards that had been introduced in 1992, and those standards had created radical changes in the way we instructed in mathematics in K-12. And it, so from 92 to 95, that's 3 years. And during that period, our outcomes dropped so catastrophically that we were seeing all this pressure. And the same when we introduced nationally Common Core, all the things that we had then got rid of in California in 1997, 98, 99, all of those things have come back. And now they're coming back across the country. And the same exact words that were being used to defend the program in California in the mid-1990s are being used today to defend Common Core. So everything that I saw then, I'm seeing now, but the difference is that now it's national. And so the catastrophic failure that we dealt with in California after 3 years is something that, for sure, the whole country is going to see in 3 years if we don't get rid of Common Core sooner.
Wow. Well, thank you for pointing that very important. And I think that should really scare every parent that's listening, because I know I'm hearing that there's now tutoring being provided, you know, the parent, to help them tutor the child. And I'm just aghast when I hear that, because to me, that's like teaching the child to be dumbed down. And in essence, you as a parent don't realize it, but you're helping.
Well, hopefully you're helping the kid to recover from what's happened. But I suppose that in another way, you're helping the schools, because of course this kid's test results will be better than the kids who weren't tutored. And so if those test results measure the quality of the school these days, that's how this works, then because the school instruction is so lousy, so that the most concerned parents make sure their kids get extra support and tutoring, and then this brings up the test scores for the school, the process of tutoring itself encourages this development.
It's just a circle, because when parents don't know the truth, that's what happens. Well, Professor Milgram, we've got two great guests here with us. We've got Ms. Ann Eubank, and she studies a lot about the number. She's a number cruncher and speaks all over our state of Alabama. And we've got Linda Murphy, I almost said Professor Linda Murphy, who helped Oklahoma repeal Common Core in her state. And so we've got them on, and I would like to give them the opportunity. I know, you know, we're very concerned about businesses, and I think the BCA in Oklahoma, the business councils, they saw that when they finally convinced them of the truth about Common Core, it helped their state. And so I'd like to offer first, I guess, Ms. Ann, the chance to ask you some questions, because I think she needs to be able to understand how this affects businesses so she can share it with them. So if you don't mind, Ms. Ann, I'll let you ask him some questions to start.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you, Dr. Milgram and Linda, both for being on our station today and talking with us. I do have some questions, Linda. I just saw how do we convince these business people that Common Core is not what they're being told it is? When I give my speech, I have to wear a tinfoil hat during the part where I'm talking about the connections and connecting the dot, because the people in the audience are looking at me like, she's crazy. She's a conspiracy theorist. but we can connect the dots. So tell me, how did you do it? How can we get these people to understand where the money's coming from and what the end game is? Because I just don't have the right words. So help me with that.
I would just say, Anne, that like any type of speaking or teaching, you've got to know your audience or the people that you're speaking with or a general understanding of where they're coming from. And I really do try to just start out with a spoonful of understanding up front. And I try to plug it into what's happening in their community, in the state. And it depends on the audience. I mean, if you're talking to a group of parents and people who are, you know, politically active, I want them to understand that this is a political decision to change education in this way and go back to those foundations. In fact, I really do that with most groups, go back to the beginning, that this was not a state-led or state-created reform movement, that it is from the Governors Association, you know, all of those connections. And
yes.
I think it's hard for us sometimes because we know there's so much more, but I find that if you give them understanding and open their eyes and they really get the depth on just the first step of understanding, that they will themselves be motivated to get more. And, of course, giving them your contact information and ways to research on their own. That's what I find,
Ms. Linda,
is most beneficial.
Let me go in here and ask Professor Milgram, because one of the places, Ms. Linda, you know, y'all went to was Huntsville. And Professor Milgram, you know, Huntsville is very technological-minded because of the Space Center. The history and the legacy there. Would you mind sharing with us the concerns that you have for the technology businesses?
Well, again, let me go back. I mean, because everything tracks back, I think, in the end to California. That's where all of this started in the 1980s and reached its peak in 1992 with what happened in California, as you're well aware, the California and Silicon Valley in particular lead the country in the development of in high tech kind of businesses, Intel and Cisco and Hewlett Packard and so on and so forth. They're all here, right in Silicon Valley, And what was telling, and what you can't forget, is that between 1992, when these kind of programs that we're seeing coming out of Common Core now were being pushed and developed on all the school systems throughout California, between 1992 and 1995, the outcomes for the students in California dropped so precipitously that All of these industries, that's Intel and Cisco and IBM and you know, all of them, came to the governor and said something has to be done. And the reason they said it was they then added and explained, we cannot hire current high school graduates for even our entry-level jobs. And, of course, they also said that, of course, there's been such a market drop as a result of this in the quality of the college graduates that we have problems hiring them. So what they were doing at that point was they were hiring people from Taiwan and Korea and Singapore and India and Russia. And ultimately in recent years, they've moved most of their research out of this country and into those countries because it's cheaper and more efficient. We still are not producing the level of people that can handle these high-tech jobs. And we can track it right back to the failures in the school system that started with what is you're seeing today in Common Core.
Mm. So we could go to the BCA and say, go look at what happened to California between 92 and 95, And that's what you're going to be seeing in Alabama and the rest of the country with Common Core again, where the people who are supporting Common Core at this point, all we hear is college and career ready. How do we get the point across? They have no idea what they're talking about. This is what's going to happen.
So, well, I mean,
I think that's the problem.
It is actually it is exactly the problem, and we've been terribly unsuccessful in this. The business what is the business consortium, whatever they are, these various industry groups in other states. They have been funded by people who are very much in favor of Common Core. Indeed, Gates money. Was basically responsible for all of this. They supported NGA in the development of Common Core. They have been, given money by Gates and so forth, and they have been very resistant to criticizing Common Core. But and so you know, we say all of these things. We say, you know, what you're going to see in 3 years is what California saw in 3 years, and we still haven't recovered in California from what happened then. And if that's what you want, then that's what you're going to get. But they don't listen. They don't listen. And so right now I'm in a kind of depressed state that way. And I say, you know, I'm not guessing here. We went through it, and there's no way it's going to change. when it's now across the entire country. And so they're going to go through it within 3 years. They're going to see exactly what we saw, and that may, in fact, be the only way they will learn.
Okay.
Professor Milgram, I think you said... Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Ann. Go ahead, Ms. Ann.
No, you go ahead. I was just going to ask him about the geometry that
Oh, go ahead, please.
That was experimental, used in Russia, that totally is against the logical progression and the teaching of logic. Can you speak on that? Because I've had some parents ask me about that, and I just don't have the knowledge and information to...
Right. That's tricky. It really is. Because the outline who authored that piece of Common Core was a Berkeley mathematician named Hongxi Wu, or Wu Hongxi, if you want to say it correctly. And he's a very capable mathematician. And in fact, in point of fact, the thing that he outlined, when taught properly by high school teachers who know enough geometry to teach it properly, it is completely rigorous. And it is the kind of a method that I would use with Stanford sophomores, juniors, and seniors in a year, 1 year long sequence in geometry, if we taught such a sequence. Now, the problem with all of this is, and we know this problem, we know the difficulties, because this approach is exactly what was tried in Russia some 30 years ago, and just rapidly went away. The problem here, and partly the problem there, is that there isn't one high school math teacher in 500 or 1,000 who knows enough mathematics to teach this coherently and sensibly. And as a result, there is no way that this approach is going to have any better results here, where our teachers actually learned less about the subject than the teachers, the comparable teachers in Russia did 30 years ago. There is no way that we are going to come out of this with the students learning any geometry, and since they're handling it in this new way and they can't do it right, we're going to end up with people knowing absolutely no geometry. They didn't know much before. Now they're going to know none.
Oh,
wow. Well, Professor Milgram, I think one of the things that, let me go ahead and let Ms. Linda Murphy, I'll ask some more questions later on. Ms. Linda, you want to ask some questions to Professor Milgram?
Sure. Thank you. Dr. Milgram, I'm so pleased to be able to talk with you and have appreciated very much what you've done in your efforts, and it has made a difference in a lot of states for us to have more backup and ammunition, so to speak, in our battles on the state level and in each local community. In 1992, I was opposing the outcomes-based education process, which came from the Federal Department of Education through a grant, Dr. William Spady. I'm sure you're very familiar with all of that. Dr. Spady was in the state of Oklahoma and out across the nation with the same philosophy, and as you said, perhaps California was even on the cutting edge ahead of that, actually being rolled out in about maybe 93 in the state of Oklahoma, late 92. But we did get it stopped in Oklahoma, knowing that that philosophy is still out there in the minds and the teaching of some teachers because they liked it and thought it was great, not knowing enough about education and learning to have been able to discern that. But in Oklahoma, we realize that we've only stopped the state mandate for the standards, which was in our law. And we've also stopped the state testing by mandate, the state testing for Common Core. Now, we've got some political battles going on here, even still getting that done, and realize that in the teacher training and the curriculum in other places, we still have battles to fight. But I very much agree with what you said, and what I'm wondering, would like to hear you talk about, is the STEM education that's being sold and put into place and what that really is and the level of math and science that it really is for engineering, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The STEM is a real buzzword, I know, around the country. In Oklahoma, we're seeing it in elementary schools. But what will this be, the way you're seeing it being utilized?
Well, okay. I guess I should give you a little bit of data before I give you the background. So here's the situation. If a student comes into the universities, or, I mean, first of all, STEM is a university thing. You don't do STEM. You don't work in STEM. There are no careers in STEM, basically, if you don't have a four-year university degree in a STEM area. When we talk about STEM, we have to be talking about college graduates. And not merely college graduates, but college graduates that are actually getting their degrees in mathematics, in engineering, in science, STE.
Technology. Uh-huh.
Technology, yes. I keep forgetting technology.
There are so many in there.
There are strong conditions and they're sophisticated conditions to enter into STEM. So now let's suppose that we have a student coming to the university whose preparation is not at the level that they are able to take the pre-calculus or a calculus course as their first math course. And let's suppose that that student fully intends to major in a STEM area. So we've got this student who wants to go into STEM, who's maybe dedicated to that, but he has to take, when he gets to the university, or even a community college for that matter, he has to take a course that is below pre-calculus or calculus as his first math course. That student has a 2% chance, a 1 in 50 chance, of ever getting a degree in a STEM area.
Wow.
So this is the situation.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So you have to ask yourself, how far does Common Core go in preparing kids to do STEM?
Well, in my opinion, they've hijacked the word or the term, the acronym, because it's a very desirable thing, and it helps market what they're doing in elementary through high school, calling it STEM, and, of course, knowing what the Common Core math standards would produce mathematically. And even Jason Zimba, who wrote the math standards, I guess, on the original panel, he even said in an open meeting in Massachusetts that this would only prepare students for the community college level in mathematics, just the Common Core itself. But I'm just seeing this STEM idea, concept, and program, they're calling it STEM, but it, to me, it is just a deception for these students as they go through school thinking they're really prepared for one of these fields.
Well, and their parents. Don't forget their parents.
Yes.
The parents are being reassured by the schools, oh, you don't have to worry. This is all set up so that your kid is going to be able to go into STEM. But the truth of the matter is, and the data shows it unquestionably, that if a student is only prepared to the level that they have to take a course below pre-calculus, then they have essentially zero chance of getting into STEM. And that doesn't matter how much they want to. And so how far does Common Core go? Well, Common Core goes only so far as to guarantee that a student will not be able to take calculus or even pre-calculus when they graduate from high school. That would not be their first college course. So they, in fact, have to. They're basically saying every student in this country is to be prepared not to go into STEM.
Yes, yes. While they say they're setting STEM up earlier and earlier in elementary for students to be better prepared so they'll be really prepared for STEM. I don't know if you've seen the elementary STEM programs where you are there, but we have them in Oklahoma, some schools.
I can't even imagine what they would be.
Yes. Maybe a little science lab, a little hands-on science. I mean, to me, that's all I've really seen at this point.
And
of course, children love that.
Background. They need a background in mathematics, above all, before they can even start. They can't do physics, and they can't do chemistry without a serious background in mathematics. And I mean high school chemistry or high school physics. So when you're guaranteeing that these kids have no real background in the subject, how in heck can you talk about giving 6- and 7- and 8-year-olds any background in these areas? You can't do it. You are teaching them exactly as you say, some kind of hands-on feel-good course that leads to nothing.
Yes. That's what I think it is, too. Thank you.
Well, Ms. Ann, has that stirred up some more questions?
I don't even know. You know, this whole rigorous and deeper, not wider, and deconstructing numbers up until you're in the fifth grade instead of learning your multiplication tables. I don't understand how they think that's going to work. I can deconstruct a number in my mind faster than they can do it on paper. My granddaughter can do that. And you know, y'all heard the story where she came, she was at my house doing her homework, and I said, aren't you supposed to draw your boxes and squares and circles? She said, that takes too much time. I'm not doing that. Is the whole of course she got a zero on her paper, but that's okay with me. And I just don't understand how deconstruction of numbers until you're that old is going to give you a better foundation. Can somebody help me on that? You know,
Well, you're right. It can't. What's going on, and what you noticed with your grandkid, that, you know, they only have to be shown these things once, and they get it because it's really straightforward and it makes sense. So the equivalence between, or not equivalence, but the relation between numbers and counting, and that's what's going on. But, you know, these kids, they have to be shown it once. They do not have to see it for 4 years. They see it once, they get it. They see it drummed into them over and over and over again. They get bored. They get hostile. That's when you see these kids that are in fourth, fifth, sixth grades looking at the teacher with real resentment and thinking, God, when can I get out of this? You're not giving these kids credit for their native intelligence. And it destroys them in so many ways.
Are they spending two periods a day on math starting in the second grade and two periods a day on ELA and no art except once every 2 weeks and very little recess time for these young children? What do they think they're going to accomplish with that?
Well, what they think they're going to accomplish and what they will accomplish are two different things. But what you're really dealing with here, you have to sort of work your way back. Back 10, 15 years ago when I realized just how insidious and how this perspective was and how difficult it was to get rid of, I had to look into it and see where does this come from? Because it pedagogically, and in every sense, it just makes no sense. So where does it come from? Well, it comes from the fact that one of the chief objectives of the schools of education in their training of what they call pre-service teachers, that's before they actually teach, is what they call equity. And what equity means is look at the most intellectually challenged kid in the class and aim the class at him or her. So, and of course, what they do, even in those terms, they get it wrong. Even if that's what they're trying to do, they get it wrong. Because the actual research in developmental psychology on how you approach education with developmentally challenged children does not say, let's keep repeating and repeating the same thing over and over again. What it says is, instead of giving them, you know, a fast view of what happens, you lay it out in real detail, but you lay it out once or twice. That's all these kids need, but they do need the intermediate steps. They have to be shown those steps. Well, what the people in the ed schools do is they tell you, you know, reteach what you taught in third grade, reteach it in fourth grade, reteach it in fifth grade, because that's how you reach the developmentally challenged kids. And so that's the objective. That's the real focus of the people in the education schools is on the developmentally challenged kids. And as long as that's the case, your average and above-average kids are being shortchanged in every way possible. And because their research is so bad and their grasp of the research in the ed schools is so bad, they're not helping the developmentally challenged kids either.
May I say something here?
Yeah,
hello.
Please do, Ms. Lynn.
Okay. I just wanted to say I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Dr. Milgram, and politically, this is what we see politically. The idea of closing the achievement gap, which is, you know, this idealistic goal, that cannot ever be accomplished if all students are improving year after year. In the best of situations, there will still be an achievement gap between various groups because all of the groups move forward. And this is what I have seen with this holding the top down to make sure that the bottom comes up while the top is being held down. And the idea at the end of the process is they will have equal outcomes, equal results. I've heard, words that David Coleman, Jason Zimba, and others have said regarding social justice and closing the achievement gap and the concept of, you know, it is fair if they are all equal at the end of the process. And, of course, it's ludicrous, as you're saying, Dr. Milgram, that it won't even be a good result for any of them at the end of the process.
Yeah, and what's ironic is there are other countries, the countries that are generally high-achieving, who actually accept and use the research that was done on how you reach the lowest-level kids. And in those countries, you simply don't see these kind of gaps. And,
yes.
And it isn't because they lower the standards for the highest achieving among them. It's that they teach correctly. They teach in a way that's based on actual research. And when they do it that way, and they teach from really good curricula, which they also have, then the achievement gaps simply go away. You know, there are differences in kids. There will always be difference in kids. But overall, to see when you see one group doing markedly worse than another group, then that goes away. That's just not present in these countries. In fact, here's some data that give you some real idea of what is going on in these high-achieving countries. Typically, in the high-achieving countries, over 90% of the populations have high school degrees. And in order to graduate from high school in half of those countries, at least, you have to have had a course in calculus. So over 90% of the people in those countries have the ability to handle in high school a calculus course. Well, our kids are no dumber on average than the kids in these countries. So the reality is that over 90% of our population, the kids, have the ability to handle a calculus course in high school. And, you know, and when you're aiming that the highest course you're going to teach these kids, as Common Core mandates, is Algebra 2, you're downgrading everybody. And it will not change anything. You will not achieve any new results. So all that happens is you look and you remember, or you should always keep in mind, Einstein's definition of insanity, which is that doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, Professor Milgram, if I may point this out, Ms. Linda, I have seen an article, I was just trying to find it, of where what you're saying, Professor Milgram, you know, it was like a minority, a school, but yet because of the high expectations and the really good math curriculum, these minorities were moving up. And, I've got to find that article, but we know it happens. And it's so sad, Ms. Linda, because we're not using those models. And as a matter of fact, it's just being shoved in the back because there is a plan here. But I also want to ask Professor Milgram to comment, because you have said this before, which is this is really dangerous for the nation, because what we're going to do is pretty much, as you have seen, you're not able to really high young people with, you know, this higher level of math. It's just not possible anymore here in our country. And therefore, you're going to see a lot more of these professional jobs, engineers, really jobs being imported and filled, rather, with people from different nations. And I think that is a national security risk.
Yeah, But it is. But we've gone past that. That was something that I was, you know, I and a lot of other people were saying, you know, these are the dangers that you're facing. But we were saying that in the 1990s. We've gone past that. Let me give you a short experience. See, what one of the fields that I work in is robotics and protein folding. We got this very good, major, prestigious grant from the National Science Foundation some 6-7 years ago at Stanford to work in those areas. And the grant was sufficiently generous that we had money to hire at least one postdoc to help us. And we looked around. Since it was money from the National Science Foundation, we first looked to see if there was any recent PhD in the areas of robotics and related areas who was an American citizen who we could hire. And with that grant and the money we could afford to pay, we could virtually hire any recent PhD. And we looked around, and we couldn't find one that was good enough. So I suggested, I had recently been talking to a young guy who had just gotten his PhD in robotics, and I was very impressed by him, and I suggested that, well, he's not an American citizen, but maybe we should really look at him seriously. And my colleague, my co-principal investigator on this grant, had occasion to visit the school where this guy was at. At that point, he came back and said, I've hired him. And now this, I have to tell you a little bit about this kid. Not a kid, of course, a full-grown man. But the thing that you had to know was that he was the first, he's ethnically Chinese. Indeed, he grew up in the Shanghai area. He was the first PhD in China who got his PhD at a Chinese university in robotics. And he was coming here because, you know, the senior people, researchers in robotics are still in this country. And he was coming here to work with them, and then he was expected to go back to China and to work at one of the new universities they were putting together and have put together in China. Now, already, I mean, they had done this one thing that really challenged us, was that they had produced a PhD of that quality in China. He never left China until he had his degree. Previous to that, what we could count on was a continuous supply of the most talented, the brightest, the strongest kids in the world coming to the United States to study these high-end areas. And from that group, we could pick and select the strongest of them and try very hard to get them to stay here, because they were our main source of support for years, since we couldn't produce U.S. citizens at that level. But now, for the first time, we had a student who'd gotten his degree in China, which meant that in China now they could create a PhD. They had advisors and the support system to train students at that level who were really superior. And we, you know, 2 years in, I think I and my co-principal investigator had a casual conversation with him, and you know, both of us, it turned out, felt the same way. We felt, okay, it's true, and we're honored that you came to work with us here, but the reality is that within 5 or 6 years, if we want to work with the best in the world, we've got to go there. So our dominance in the high end, you know, in our high end education, in the graduate level and university level and graduate level education in this country, has been for years the main support of our high end industry. Since, as I keep telling you, it's been years since we've been able to produce people consistently at that level. And we're able to keep a number of them, but the truth of the matter is that number keeps diminishing, and more of them are never ever leaving China or these other high achieving countries, or once they get a degree here, they go back. So it's getting harder and harder for us to maintain our advantage in industry in this country. What our major high-tech industries are in fact doing is moving their research over to these countries. Microsoft has moved its developmental work to Beijing. IBM has moved its major developmental work to India. And it goes on and it goes on. And, you know, and all this is a recipe for economic, you know, for economic destruction.
Yes. Well, it's a shame with all of our abilities and research and knowledge and years of building up our institutions that it's coming to this point.
Well, you know, it's easy to analyze what's going on. And in the end, there's only one thing that really has to be thought about. Just how much nonsense are we willing to tolerate from the schools of education? And I guess I would draw the line at the point where they threaten our economy.
Yes. Well, our security falls right in line there, too, as you know, along with our prosperity. So it is dangerous insecurity as well.
And talking about economy... Oh, go ahead, Professor.
Oh, no, I really wasn't going to comment. I was just going to agree.
Talks about economy, Miss Ann, you know, I can just envision, because we're already hearing this, that a lot of our professors in our colleges really are, you know, they don't speak fluent English. It's like they're having to be imported. So, Professor Milgram, I'm guessing in the math and maybe even sciences, we're going to see more and more of that, especially with this kind of teaching, because we're not going to produce really good professors in math, you know, and a lot of these sciences, because they're not going to be capable.
Yeah, and now at an elite school like Stanford, I have looked at the ethnic makeup of our current groups of graduates. The graduate students, over two-thirds of them in the technical areas, engineering, the sciences, computer science, over two-thirds of them are foreign-born. And as of about, I think it was 7 years ago, over 50% of the families in Silicon Valley are foreign-born. So it is worse than you can actually imagine in terms of our own citizens.
Well, I guess, Ms. Linda, this is why, you know, a lot of, you know, I remember reading articles from Peyton Wilcott about charter schools in Texas, and really the Gulen schools, I think they started popping up in Texas because of a law. They could set up charter schools. It did not require citizenship. But there was an awful lot of, I think, H-1B-1 visas that were being issued to, you know, to Turkish teachers coming here to teach. And I'm guessing we're going to see more of that. And that is really dangerous in light of what is going on. And it's almost like a Pandora's box has been opened, because now, you know, they're going to be importing more with this mindset.
Well, all of it to me goes back to, as Dr. Milgram said, just teaching students in the ways that we know that are proven, researched ways and methods of teaching students in the classroom. I taught special education, certified in a couple of areas there in standard elementary ed. And we do know how to teach children. We just haven't been allowed to do that because of all of the interruptions of all of the reforms that continue in the 90s, now again with Common Core, and the philosophies that aren't solid that have been integrated in. I really, in Oklahoma, I do have some hope with what we're seeing. We have a contest going on for state superintendent of schools, and we have our legislature who is pretty well informed about the Common Core standards now. The majority of them are. And I believe that we may get back to more and more local control where parents and elected local school boards can really look at what actually works. And we're going to fight the No Child Left Behind. I know that's a federal law, but, you know, we are going to work on that because that's what we need is to get that local control in place and help some of these business owners who are not part of the global U.S. Chamber of Commerce agenda for Common Core. They just go along with it because they don't know what it is, hoping to get more and more of them informed, just one-on-one and in small groups. So that's what we're working on in Oklahoma. Otherwise, you know, it will just go on and on and on, and there is nothing but disastrous results ahead. That's for sure. I absolutely see that's true.
The problem we're having here in Alabama is most of our school boards are now being appointed and not elected, and we're not real sure how that came about. The second problem is we are having a group of people draft a charter school bill this year for the legislature to look at, and they have purposefully kept any conservative from being on that draft committee. We've asked to be a part of it, but they want no interruptions of the BCA or the Business Council of Alabama's on there. BAO, which is the Black Alliance for Educational Options, which, by the way, is a Gates-funded and Gates-founded group that goes into low-income areas talking about educational justice and socioeconomic equality in the school system. And then we have a Charter Schools for Alabama group that is headed up by a Students First person. So they have not allowed the conservatives to come in and say charter schools are a great idea, but this is what we want. We want classical education. We want the charter schools to be able to teach classical education and not be required to use Common Core curriculum. So we have several things going on here that we may or may not be able to get a handle on. That,
well, we know we can't put out every fire, but we need to go to the heart of it. And what Dr. Milgram is bringing us today with this deeper understanding of some of the mathematic problems that we have with the curriculum, the standards, and just the overall field of mathematics, these are things we can share with people who will listen. And I just don't waste time on people that won't listen. We don't have to have everyone convinced of the understanding or the knowledge on the issue to get something done politically. We just have to have enough votes to get it passed. And then we have backlash from those that want to change it back. But we're gaining ground the whole time, and more people are aware that Common Core is not going to bring the results that it was sold to be in the first place through the Chambers of Commerce meetings and Qantas Lions Club, you know, all the different organizations that they brought this message to.
Well, Ms. Linda, I know you and Ms. Ann will be writing articles I would hope so, based on what we've heard today with Professor Milgram, because he is warning, he's telling us, I have seen this before. You need to see it now, because what you're going to have is really not just a state that is, you know, unfortunately reaping the results of that mentality, but a whole nation. And, states can pick each other up, but when you've got the whole country going down, that's a different, version altogether to work with. So we're just going to hope and pray that people, you heard that, write articles, letter to the editor. And Professor Milgram, is there an article already that you've written about the California lesson?
No, actually, no. You bring up a good point there. That's something that I had not really thought about doing, but as I was listening to what I was saying, what you were saying, and thinking about it right now, I realized that that's something that should be done. There are a lot of us that were involved in California back in the mid 90s and late 90s who saw all of this. And I think that it would be very, very important for an article like that to be written. And I think I can get a number of the people here in California that were involved to actually collaborate on such an article. And I think, obviously, it would be very, very worthwhile.
We need to
share one more thing if we have a moment here. Do you have a moment?
Oh, go ahead, please. We've got time.
All right. John Saxon with Saxon Math was from Oklahoma. You may know him, Dr. Milgram. Did you ever meet him? Or I'm sure you know of Saxon Math.
I was a very good friend with his second in command.
Okay. Well, Dr. Saxon supported me when I ran for state superintendent of schools, and I got to know him through that time. And then about 2 years later, this would have been in about 1996, I served in Governor Keating's office as education advisor. And as I said, we did have some ground gained in that we got the outcomes-based education accreditation system out of our schools, which was in state law at that time through, a large omnibus bill that had passed. But Dr. Saxon and I were at a phonics conference, and at that time he was working on the development of his Saxon Phonics, which came out just a couple of years later. Dr. Saxon and I were standing in a meeting area, and the former superintendent of schools from California walked up. Now, I don't remember his name. It started with an H, but you would know him in the early 90s. Maybe late 80s, and would have been the one in office over this terrible math and other areas that were, experimental education. And mm-hmm. Dr. Saxon was so livid with that man. He asked him why he was at this phonics conference when he had thrown it out of the schools in California, and why, he had not accepted the Saxon math in California, and had really just been an obstacle. And so I found that, just one of those moments that was unique, that Dr. Saxon, he knew the ruination that this one man put into office had really brought a lot of that into the state. I'm not saying it was all on his shoulders, but certainly a great deal of it.
Yeah, I know who you mean, and of course, more and more frequent thing at my age is I'm blanking on the name, but I know who you mean.
I'm thinking it's something like Honig.
Honig,
okay. Yes.
And you know that Honig was sort of convicted of a crime a few years later, and he couldn't serve at the level that he had been as state superintendent of education. But he's very high up again in the education hierarchy in California today.
Oh, dear.
And we can track back for a little further than Honig. It turns out that there was one person who was almost totally responsible in the end for all the developments that led to what Honig did. And that was a fellow back in the 1980s called Michael Kirst, who was at that time president of the State Board of Education. Now, the governor at that time was Brown.
Uh-huh.
And gee whiz, you know, Jerry Brown is again the governor of California. And guess
yes, the people are aligned, aren't they?
Guess who his president of his state board of education is?
Who?
Oh,
Mike Kirst.
Oh, boy.
So it's all back.
Yeah.
And Honig is he couldn't be superintendent again, but he's very high up. He's sort of just one level down from the state superintendent.
Oh. Well,
so it's all back.
That's very interesting. I didn't know he was back in the power base there.
Yes, yes, yes. And the most discouraging name in the power base, in a way, I suppose, is Mike Kirst.
Yes. Well, that's unfortunate. So, you know, it's very, very hard to get changes in policy when these people have control. And I know that I've talked with parents and teachers in California who want to, you know, fight this and are, but it's just very difficult there to see much progress
I think reality in California is that we have 5 years of it.
Uh-huh.
And in 5 years, be based on our previous experience and based on just basic reality,
uh-huh,
the situation will be really bad, and it'll be easy to get it replaced. But, you know, in the end, you look back, 5 years is more than enough to destroy an entire half generation of kids in California.
Wow. Yes. Yes, I see. Would you tell us a little bit your thoughts on children, kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, those lower elementary grades, not getting that basic foundation for adding, subtracting in everyday life, counting change, going to the grocery store, even just the basic functional math skills to calculate quickly and easily in their head?
Well, I think it isn't like that. I think that's the one thing that Common Core will probably manage to do.
Okay.
Is that the kids will get a basic background in basic arithmetic. But the problem is that it stops there.
Hmm.
That it's going to take them 5 to 6 years to do that because it goes incredibly slowly. At that point, our students are 3 or more years behind the students in the high-achieving countries, according
uh-huh
to Common Core. And that's all they get. That's all they get. They don't get anything else. The kids in the high-achieving countries have had 3 years of real math on top of
uh-huh
that. So these kids are just going to, you know, already at the end of fifth and sixth grade, they're incredibly stunted.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to make it worse, but I've had some just one-on-one experience with students who have had the Common Core processes being taught to them in first, second, third grade, and they're just confused about how to do quick, simple calculation.
Yes.
It seems to me that, you know, these teachers that are not getting those foundational things in first before they try to, you know, work on these long processing worksheets, the students then are just confused about how to add or what that even means.
Yes. And that's a tragedy in many, many ways. But again, you want to look and you want to say, okay, what's responsible? I tell you that the structure of the material in Common Core through those grades should produce kids who are completely literate in basic analysis, basic counting, basic arithmetic.
Mm-hmm. I guess
perfectly
a teacher
right
that doesn't realize they're not getting that foundation laid, you know, they're just spending that processing time.
The why is simple, but you have to think about it, The why is that the education schools do not prepare the K-6 elementary school teachers. They do not prepare them in mathematics. The only course in mathematics that they're ever given, and that's not always the case, is a course which they call, as you, I'm sure you're aware, math methods. And math methods is basically a year of political indoctrination in what amounts to what not to do, because everything they're pushing is exactly what you shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly can appreciate the education that we've had with traditional education and realize that this is just something we've taken for granted, just people take for granted. And when they hear about education reform, they think it's going to be something to improve education. And as you said, Anne, we've just got to communicate enough to enough people in each of our states to get that message, to look into this and see and get the pressure on the political office holders, the officials that are elected, that can change this within a state. And we've still got lots of ground that's been lost individually for students, but again, you know, we've got to stop that further destruction. And you know, I'm still motivated to fight this. We see hope and progress here in our state, and even when people don't get it totally stopped in their school, they're at least aware of it. And then they can educate their child at home, deprogram and reprogram. And, you know, some people are going to homeschooling, of course, private schools where they're still getting a good traditional education. And in some of our schools in Oklahoma, because we repealed Common Core from the standards, from the law, the standards from the law, and the testing is supposed to be stopped, that has given the freedom to the administrators and teachers. A lot of our rural schools didn't really want to do this in the first place because they know the difference between traditional ed and what this is. And so we've got some pockets of good education, you know, occurring statewide.
We're hearing that here in Alabama, too. I've had several teachers tell me, I close my door, I do what I've always done, and until somebody walks into my classroom and says, you can't do that anymore because Dr. Bice has put off teacher assessments for two more years because we did put enough pressure on everybody to educate, that we've got teachers that are doing what they're supposed to do, but then we have teachers who are full bore for it, and it's confusing. And now we've got
this mixed bag.
Now we've got this new comprehensive counseling and guidance program coming in where the teachers are going to be helped, and I use that word, helped, by the professional guidance counselors in every school. So we're trying to battle that before it gets put in.
Well, I might just add here, as far as math is concerned, the 2 hours of math, 2 hours of English language arts, and yet it's not good, you know, good education even at that. One thing I've seen politically being done with that big block of time and not having any other standards for subject areas officially part of Common Core standards. You know, the official Common Core state standards are English language arts and math.
Right.
And yet the plan, and I've seen this in writing, I cannot quote, I'll pull that up, but later I'll give you the quote, but where the other subject areas, science concepts, history, social issues, civics, that kind of information integrated into reading, so that when they're reading, this is what they are reading, and the subjects are integrated in. Therefore, politically, there wasn't an approval process for approving concepts and ideas and worldviews that would not have been approved. Does that make sense? Am I communicating?
Yes.
Yes,
and
yes,
our
it's dangerous.
Says,
and
our legislature says it's not their business to tell the State Board of Education what they can and cannot do.
Well, there's just a real lack of understanding of what's happening and how it's happening, and there are so many layers to it. But, again, even in some of the math problems in some of the Common Core curriculum, the words in the word problems have a concept from a worldview integrated into the math problem, you know, where you see, like Pearson, some of their curriculum is like that. So I'm not saying that's being done across the board, but that is definitely a goal that some have, is that we would integrate in subject material into other work, the basics, the reading and the math, so that those concepts are there and they're learning them, but they're not separated out into a book where you can pull out, you know, and say this is what science is being taught, this is the social studies being taught. And, of course, all of this going into technology is what we're really looking at, you know, where parents and teachers don't even know what's coming through the computer to the student. You know, that's a big push. And when you get into technology, delivered curriculum and testing at the level that it's, you know, hours and hours out of the day, especially if it's adaptive, where the student gets their own individualized curriculum and testing based on their responses, then there's no way a teacher can keep up with what is even being delivered to the student.
It's just a circle, Ms. Linda, and really at the very center of this is that child, because as bad as that math sounds, Professor Milgram, you know, then there's the English. And then the child gets remediated, and like you said, instead of just 1 hour, you've got 2 hours. And the thing they love, art, music, where's that? That's gone. And on top of that, you know, we're hearing that they're going to get counseling. And, you know, we really have to be careful, because I even saw in some states, you know, that the parent doesn't have to be informed that that child is seeing counseling. And so they made it very convenient, because the schools are now going to be one-stop shop. That is the plan. And then we really need to be careful, because at the age of, I saw in Illinois, at the age of 12 and over, that parent does not have to be informed. So I think that's the thing we really have to get zoom on. But Professor Milgram, I'm looking forward to that article, so please don't forget us. We want to see it. That's going to give us a lot of firepower, because I know Ms. Ann Eubanks is going to use that powerfully. Right, Ms. Ann?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, and because a businessman that's given his life to his business does not want to see it destroyed. He wants it passed down to future generations. We're being told that this is, you know, businessmen see this as being good, but I think once we get such a letter that is, you know, based on fact, I mean, it's already proven, I think that will be the wedge that will open their eyes to say, you know, we've heard a lot of bad things about this, and this is going to be the nail on the coffin. So thank you, Professor Jim, in advance.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to that. We're excited. And as always, can't thank y'all enough for sharing your valuable time. Professor Milgram, thank you, Ms. Ann and Ms. Linda. And, you know, coming to our state and doing that, all you did is hard work, but we thank God you persevered, because it's making a difference. And all these things that they're doing is making every parent now really, I think, they're hearing so much, they cannot push it away anymore. So, but
that's,
I'm going to go ahead and close this and ask people to please share today's podcast. All three of them gave you so much information, I think, that you're going to find so useful. And Professor Jim, I do remember you talking about shopping cart math in one of the interviews we've done in the past, and I'm thinking, well, you know, that's pretty much basically all these children are going to get. They're going to be so good, and it's going to take them a long time, but they're going to get it, because that's all they're going to really, you know, be taught. And you look at the pace of how they're having to do simple addition. I mean, I guess they only get four problems a day. I don't know, but, you know, it takes so long to do one. So these poor children, they really need to be prayed over. And we're seeing that there's now in Dothan, Alabama, a flyer was sent out to even elementary age children, Miss Linda, that you know, with a picture of a young child, it looks like an elementary age child is looking depressed, and it's suicide. You know, it's a flyer for a meeting about suicide, and the concern of many parents is my third grader doesn't even know what that word means, and now I'm going to have to explain what that word means. And I know that mental health therapists have told us, you know, you're supposed to nurture these children for as long as you can, make them feel safe, make them feel supported, and this is kind of a shock for some of them.
I'm guessing
a lot of them at that age.
Okay, do we not understand that is all a false flag in order to put in our new counseling and guidance program?
Well, it's part of it. I'm certain of that, because your state plan from Alabama, that comprehensive plan, which is using the national standards through the School Counselors Association, and the way that it's written up in that official report from your state superintendent, says that all students in all grades will have social-emotional goals set for them. Now, that means they're going to be looking at all of these areas. Yep. So that's really the core problem, is that state plan. Do you know when that comes up for a vote?
Next month. In fact, I have it laying in front of me. I'm about halfway through. I'm on page 36 of 57. And I'm looking at the academic development domain, the career development domain, and the personal social development domain.
Right, and it says on in there, it's emotional, and this is what we call in education the affective domain.
Right.
Attitudes, values, emotions, feelings, all of those are under the affective domain in Bloom's taxonomy of the cognitive and the affective domain. And as I've mentioned before, in the past, traditionally, and by law, we would only test or train or set a goal for a student in that area in special ed if we had parental consent before we even tested them, much less tell them anything or do anything with them. So here's what I say about it, about that flyer. It is horrible that a suicide flyer, suicide meeting about suicide to prevent suicide. We know it's a good intention on the part of these people, but the fact that they sent it home with children is upsetting people, and just like the five-year-old in Mobile that had to sign a contract that she would not commit suicide and she would not kill others after she used her crayon as a gun, all of these extreme examples that are happening right now in your state are waking people up, and that can point to that state plan and the vote coming up. And I would use that, you know, catalyst of distress for people to say, take action and make sure your state school board member votes against that state plan, and they need to know what's in it. You know, that one page that we have now of a summary, because they're not all going to read that whole PDF. They're not going to download it, find it, read it. Just give them the page. They can pick off, you know, one or two items that they can remember and get the word out on that.
That's what we intend to do.
So
well,
I think it's very timely to go after that goal.
I think so,
thank you, Linda.
Very, very timely. And, yes, thank you so much. And Professor Milgram, and with that in mind, I'm going to close this in prayer, because there is so much to give. But I thank God for the history of this nation, and that's another thing we can deal with another day, the new A-PUSH framework. So, but bottom line is, I think we have to pray against the mentality of these developers, because it very clearly shows they don't know what they're doing. These are not appropriate. And as Joan Landa says, you know, it's going to lead to children very easily triggered, easily manipulated.
Yes.
And so she's very much, she's a mental health expert, warning about the kind of generation that's going to be a result of this kind of teaching staying in place. So we must all work at it. And thank you, Professor Jim, for that, again, that article that's coming up, and what you are going to do with it, Miss Ann and Miss Linda. So let's give that to God. That's one win today. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we just thank you for this opportunity. You said your people perish for lack of knowledge, and because they have rejected your knowledge, you will also forget the children. Lord, for a long time, Hosea 4:6, I've not read it that far. But, Lord, we do see the effects on the children. We ask for mercy. We ask for help. We ask for wisdom. We pray for continued uncommon favor and wisdom upon Lord Professor Jim Milgram, Ms. Ann Eubanks, Lord, and Ms. Linda Murphy. And we ask that you continue to use them mightily, along with others like Professor Stotsky, to continue to shine the light of truth so that parents, grandparents, anybody that loves children would stand in the gap and fight for these precious children and really fight for our nation. We thank you, Lord, and we ask these things in Jesus' precious name. Amen. Thank you all so much. And listeners, again, please go to the website www.cityonahill.tv. Share the podcast. Click on the Heroes Raising the Flag over Iwo Jima, and that'll lead to the Blog Talk Radio, and you can download this and share it. Thank you, everyone, and God bless you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.